You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name's Tony East. I cover the Pacers for the Westside Community News and Forbes Sports, and today we're breaking down a big-time bounce-back win over the Memphis Grizzlies. The Pacers had tonight one of the most complete team performances this team has had all season against a team on a seven-game win streak. No longer. Impressive stuff. We'll take a look at the Bucks tomorrow, and then I'm going to do a tiny mini rant. I'll try to keep it short because this has kind of been discussed already this season about the minutes of some of the guys playing more minutes on this team. Let's start with this game tonight. No, just an absolutely – I mean, this is the dream with a team like this, right? They don't have, the A guy, right? The Pacers don't have, the super mega awesome star, but they have so many B guys, right? And then under McMillan, we saw this kind of game all the time where tons of guys score in double figures. They had six guys in double figures tonight. And something I've harped on with this team in the past is, you know, most of the time they get it from Brogdon and Sabonis this year, and almost every time they get it from Turner, they usually just need one guy or maybe a guy and like half of another guy to step up to get a win. And sometimes they don't get that. Tonight they got it from almost everybody. Justin Holiday hit half of his shots and had 10 points. Miles Turner had a double-double, 22 and 11. Doug McDermott had 11 points. Jeremy Lamb was fantastic, 19 points. He made five threes. So they really got it from – and then McConnell was fantastic in his own way. He's never going to be the scoring type. But really, their key seven guys were all solid or better in their role. And then, of course, they got it from their two best players. The Brogdon and Sabonis were both ridiculous, putting up their all-star-esque numbers. Brogdon, 23 points, 7 rebounds. And Sabonis, maybe his best game of the season, career high, tied for career high. 32 points, 13 rebounds, and 5 assists. So just an absolutely dominant performance from the Pacers in this game. They were able to clear the bench at the end, so we saw some Jakar Sampson, some Keelan Martin, some Edmund Sumner. Not a lot, but a little bit. Always good to get those guys some development time out there. Jakar Sampson was running. He was moving. It was very fun to watch him, even for just a few minutes. So, I mean, really, this is the dream with the team makeup like this, is that you get games like this where they hit a ridiculous percentage of their threes, to be fair. But even if they had hit 13 of 29 threes instead of 16, they cruise in this game, right? Like, they were all over the Grizzlies. Their offense was moving. They were getting to the paint easily. They were kicking it out to the right guys. They didn't even shoot that many threes, right? They only took 29 because they took so many shots at the rim. They were drawing fouls. They just looked phenomenal. And I credit to absolutely everybody. I mean, I can't think of a time in this game. There were very few moments outside of a few of Goga's minutes where the team just looked like incoherent on either end of the floor. So a lot of credit there. And then defensively, I mean, I've just talked about offense. They held Ja Morant to 2 of 10 shooting. He had 10 points and 5 assists and 4 turnovers. He did not have a particularly awesome game. Brandon Clark, one of my favorite draft crushes, was held to 9 points, 3 rebounds. Kyle Anderson, 6 points as a starter. Xavier Tillman, only 4 rebounds and 12 points. Dylan Brooks played really well for the Grizzlies. Everybody else was pretty uncomfortable all night. So, really, it sounds boring for this to be the whole analysis, but just a fantastic, very complete performance from the Pacers. And it's hard not to like wins like this as a response to games like Sunday, all the questioning, because they had a practice between, so we had media 3 days in a row. We had Sixers game, practice, Grizzlies game. So a lot of the questions kind of build up for a story of, how the team's going to bounce back. So I credit Nate Bjorkman for this. Before the game, there were, I think, 2 or 3 questions about the Sixers game on Sunday. How did you guys look at film? What did you guys do at practice? How's the team? Are they ready for tonight? Is there any looming distraction? He just said, that's over. We're past that. Let's talk about Memphis. And, I don't want to sound like he was, shading media questions. It's just, the way Nate Bjorkman is he's always looking forward. He's ready for the next thing. And he does a good job of getting his team in that mindset, because it sounded like, obviously they were pissed that they blew a 20-point lead to a really good team. You always want to win those games. But to respond the way they did, to come in practice Monday focused, get some zone offense stuff down, which we'll get, I guess that's something else I'm going to talk about in a second. Get some zone offense stuff down, not sulk, stay focused on the next game, get a good game plan in for the Grizzlies, come out, not sulk, play amazing, bounce back in a big way. Tell a lot about this team, especially against a pretty good Grizzlies team that, again, had not lost since January 8th.
That was something else noteworthy in this game. The Grizzlies had a 3-2 zone for a little bit and then a 2-3 zone for a little bit. Pacers did not do awesome against the 3-2, but did do awesome against the 2-3. And they did pretty good against the Raptors 2-3, and they did pretty good against the Hornets 2-3. So it just makes Sunday all the more perplexing that they just forgot how to do anything against the Sixers zone. And some of it, to the Sixers' credit, Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle, huge guys, a lot of arms. So that's like, it's pretty hard to play around those guys. And it was more of a matchup zone, so those guys would jump out off the elbows at the ball a little more, things like that. But as soon as the Grizzlies went into 2-3 today, the Pacers were ready. They had their stuff. They game planned for it. They reacted and they schemed and practiced it after Sunday. And they really, again, just fantastic performance. I can't credit one guy enough. If I really wanted to highlight a guy, I would have to do Sabonis in this game. It was just, Adam calls these vintage Sabonis games, which is funny because he's 24 and is better than he's ever been this whole season. But I get why. It seems like in the past he had more of these when he was coming off the bench because he was playing against bench players. But one of those games where he just doesn't miss. He was 13 for 15. He hit both of his threes, just dominating the glass. Xavier Tillman, awesome player, really undervalued rookie. He's going to have a pretty solid NBA career for this Grizzlies team. But Tillman's another one of those young rookies I like to talk about that they haven't defended post-ups very much in their whole life. So Sabonis gets out there and they don't have the answers to defend him. He did a great job with him. He found cutters. He had the third most assists on the team. And when he's hitting like that, you know, Sabonis is just unstoppable. He looked fantastic. He did it over a full game. It was great. And credit to Turner for also getting in on the action, getting a double-double. Just credit to everybody. I can't say enough good stuff about how the Pacers played in this game. So that's good. They need to carry that momentum into tomorrow. Another good weekday win. The Bucks, though, are really tough. I want to talk about the Bucks in a minute after I talk about some of the minutes in this game. It's not a bad thing. This mini rant is going to be boring to many of you, but I still want to talk about it because it could be something that comes up later in the season. But first, let's talk about CBDMD because the thought of getting a good night's sleep, much easier said than done, and our friends at CBDMD have exactly what you need to sleep harder than the NBA media is sleeping on this Pacers team. CBDPM blends 500 milligrams of high-quality CBD with melatonin, valerian root, chamomile, I can't even pronounce words in this ad, and other sleep-promoting ingredients to create a powerful and effective sleep aid if you want to relax a little bit before bed. Their new CBD bath salts fuse superior CBD with Epsom, Dead Sea, and Himalayan salts to turn any bath into a luxury experience. It's a great way, again, to just get better sleep and, again, not be sleeping on the Pacers as much. It's very helpful to make anyone relax and to make it even easier to get you started off right. They're offering our listeners 25% off your next order if you use the promo code NBA at checkout, cbdmd.com. Promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD products from CBDMD. Go check them out. Mini rant. No one cares about mini rants except me. I don't even know I'm defining it as a mini rant before I do it. Sabonis played 35 minutes in this game. Whatever. That's actually low for him this season. I think he's averaging north of 37. His minute total average is probably going to be low because of that 10-point game. No, he is averaging 37. Okay. 36.8 to be exact. Brogdon right now, he only played 29 tonight, also averaging 37. So that's a lot. So this game in particular, Brogdon only played 29. They got a lot of McConnell in there. He played 28.5. Aaron Holiday was able to play 18.5, right? To Bjorkren's credit, he did a good job spreading out the point guard minutes in a blowout. Sabonis played 35 minutes in this game. Goga only played 6.5. I don't get that. Like, okay, so let's talk about the minutes thing. Me and Adam have talked about this a little bit. It's kind of been a harped on thing. Those two guys are playing a ton. I think they're top three in the league each, or top five or something like that. So Tibbs-esque, right? All the guys near the top are Knicks players and Pacers players. So James Harden is first right now at 38. And then it's Brogdon, Durant, Sabonis, Julius Randle, Kyle Lowry, RJ Barrett. So two Knicks, two Nets, Kyle Lowry, Brogdon, Sabonis is your top seven in minutes right now. And I asked Bjorken about this a long time ago. I think it was before they played the Clippers. It was around the time of the Oladipo trade. And he said something like, I am very okay with this minutes load because it's a totality thing. It's not just game minutes that can lead to injuries. It's you practice and you play games and you have shoot-arounds and you do this and you have all workouts, like actual lifting weights and working out, stuff like that. You do all this stuff and it's a total package of this is what makes guys more injury prone or more tired. Okay, and I believe that there is some science founded in that because I don't think he's just making that up. He's been on many coaching staffs before. Okay, that's fine. And he has also mentioned that Brogdon and Sabonis, you know, they've talked about it. Like, yeah, they can do this minute load. It's fine. And to the credit of Bjorkgren and these guys, they have not missed a game, right? Sabonis hurt his knee in that one game, came right back and played. Brogdon has also played in every game, which honestly is remarkable. He's been very injury prone in the past. So far, it's working. Now, that the thing with the minute stuff is it makes them more susceptible to injuries like down the road and stuff like that. And that's the fear. And the thing with like Thibodeau, who I brought up with the Knicks earlier, a lot of stuff with his injuries, maybe it's not necessarily an injury, but like the guy like Joe Noah or something, like they start aging a little bit earlier because they have a little more mileage on them. Now, we're 20 games into year one of Bjorkgren, and I'm not saying that's going to happen or is even something to consider. It's just that's the thought of high minutes usually. So I don't think necessarily that like on its own the high minutes are a terribly bad thing. It's something I'm monitoring, though, in games like this one because the Pacers are on a back-to-back, right? They play the Bucks tomorrow. They travel to Milwaukee. We had short media after the game because the guys were getting on the plane, right? We could ask Jeremy Lamb only like 3 or 4 questions because he had to go like pack and get on the plane, right? So the Pacers are up 19 at the start of the fourth. They're up 21 right away because Turner hit a jumper. And then they go up, keep it up 21. They're up 23. And then Sabonis comes in the game at a 97-121 game with 6:46 to go. And I just kind of was like, why? Because, you know, I get it that the reason, you know, if Bjorkgren's okay with the minutes and Sabonis is okay with the minutes and Brogdon's okay with the minutes, like zooming in micro one game, whatever, like whatever. Okay, you can play a lot of minutes. They won. He tied his career high in points. He came out, I think, 3 minutes later for Jakar, actually, not even Goga, which, again, weird, but whatever. He came out, to be exact, at the 4:12 mark. So he was in for like 1.5 minutes, a very short amount of time. Again, grand scheme of things, whatever. But they play tomorrow in Milwaukee, right? So it was just very weird to me that they brought him back in and they both played the whole third quarter and like they were smoking the Grizzlies. I get it. And I think a little bit of this potentially is they just blew a 20-point lead 2 nights ago. So I get the team and Bjorkgren being like, we're shoving their shit in until this game's over. Like, okay, I get it. It's just something I'm monitoring and thinking about constantly, and I wanted to talk about it because that's a lot of minutes, you know? There's a reason Tibbsing has become a thing, right? And maybe it's not like the most well-founded thing, and everything becomes more of a meme at some point in the grand scheme of like Twitter and things like that. But, you know, it's been talked about the impact that minutes can have on injuries and decline in some studies. So it's just something worth monitoring. I don't know, like this game, it's fine. Like no one got hurt. They'll go to Milwaukee, whatever. Maybe it matters by the last game of the season. And they're actually playing a shorter season. I think that's something that is not discussed when we talk about the heavy minutes these guys. They're only playing 72 this year, not 82. But I just thought it was very weird he came back in, and it made me want to talk more about minutes and what Bjorkgren is doing. But, again, I trust what his opinion is founded in science and not just him being like, I believe that this is the right amount of total workload when you include practice and stuff. You know, he's a smart guy. And I trust Brogdon and Sabonis being like, yeah, this is right for me. They know better than I do. But I just think we as viewers and researchers have proven that there might be a little bit lower of minutes number that makes sense. And it does not make sense to play Sabonis 35 minutes in a 20-point game, especially when you have a center need to develop on the bench. But just a little thing that could mean something bigger. And that's why I wanted to talk about it. But that's okay. The back-to-back tomorrow, everyone's going to be healthy. And that's really the end goal. That's important. So let's talk Bucks. They're really good. It's going to be a very fun game. But first, let's take a quick little short break so I can talk to you guys about betonline.ag, of course. We did our award show yesterday on this podcast, and we used BetOnline's future lines because they have lines for all the NBA awards. If you want to go get some money on Miles Turner, Defensive Player of the Year, they have him second at 2-1 behind Rudy Gobert at 3-2. For example, most improved player, they have Jeremy Grant at 5-4, Christian Wood at 7-5. You can get in on all this action at betonline.ag, the official betting sponsor of the Locked On Podcast Network. Super Bowl coming up. They've got prop bets on that, college basketball. Don't sit on the action. There's only one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today
for a free account. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. Get in on the action. Do not forget that promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, for that 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. The Bucks, the mighty Bucks. So as we talked about yesterday, they have not beaten Giannis since 2018, since Thaddeus Young was doing it all for the Pacers, defending Giannis, hitting threes, being an important guy on offense. So this game is going to be very hard. The Bucks are very good. The winner of this game actually walks out of the building third in the East. The Bucks are currently a half game ahead of the Pacers because they've played one less game. If the Nets had not held on against the Clippers earlier tonight, that was a very close game. This game could have been a battle for second in the East, which would have been fascinating. But the Nets did hold on. They look great. Anyway, Giannis is incredible, and it's amazing that we call this a down year for him. It is. Like, compared to his past seasons, he's averaging currently 27-11-6. That's just disgusting. Like, it's crazy that that's a down year. His points are down from last year. His rebounds are down from last year. His assists are a little bit up. And I think that's kind of where you start for me with Giannis, because his usage is down a little bit, but when he has the ball, he's passing a bit more. And this Bucks team in the offseason, they made some moves. They dealt Bledsoe and a treasure trove of picks for Jrue Holiday. They brought in Bobby Portis. They brought in DJ Augustine, Bryn Forbes. Not any big names. I think I just said like an awesome name. But compared to some of the bench they were running out last year, which again, that bench was actually pretty good. They got a lot out of Bledsoe. Wesley Matthews was good. But like they had to scrape Marvin Williams, who was 33 off the buyout market last year. Korver gave them nothing. Ilyasova gave them very little. Sterling Brown gave them very little. They haven't been hurt much this year, but their top end guys are better, at least for a regular season setting. And Jrue Holiday is just a badass, and I love these Holiday Bulls. So Giannis' stats are down, and his impact definitely looks less than it has in seasons past. But I think that's because the Bucks went through this a little. I haven't caught a ton of Bucks, admittedly. I think only four or five, but they transformed their roster in a way where he doesn't have to be like super freak Giannis do it all like he has in the past. They're getting more out of Middleton. He's averaging a career high in points. They have Jrue Holiday, who Bledsoe again has been good for the Bucks in past regular seasons, but Jrue Holiday is just a step up. They don't even ask Jrue to do that much. He only shoots about 13 shots a game. He's still just an absolutely incredible defender. That's where he helps Giannis the most. He makes Giannis not guard amazing players. So Jrue has been really good for them. Brooke Lopez still shooting league average on tons of three-point attempts. And DiVincenzo's even stepped up for this team. He's become a good shooter. So their starting five is really solid. Giannis deferring a little bit more makes his team just all the more dangerous because he's that hard to stop. You can't really load. He's so big you can't even load up the Bucks. And now they have a good bench. Bobby Portis can do some stuff. He's not awesome, but he's fine. Pat Connaughton, DJ Augustine, Bryn Forbes. I named all those guys already, but like I just said, all of them can do some stuff. They're not like useless, just cogs you're putting out for 15 minutes to not lose a game. So the Bucks are just a tough team because they have Giannis. And they take a ton of threes. They're fifth in the league in total three-pointers. They're fourth in three-point percentage because Giannis has that kind of gravity, right? Everyone wants to stop him because he's so efficient at the rim. It leads to open shooters. Jrue's hitting 38%. He's never been a good or like that high of a three-point shooter in the past. Chris Middleton's hitting 46%. Again, Lopez league average, 36%. DiVincenzo, 39%. All their bench guys are over 40%. Portis, Connaughton, Augustine, Forbes, DJ Wilson, all over 40% from three this year. So they're just torching the Nets. They're really hard to stop from deep. So that's one key to this game. They're going to take a ton of threes. The Pacers have given up a very high percentage of threes. They did not against the Grizzlies. But get out on those shooters, and I know that it's really hard to ask the Pacers to make Giannis pass to shooters and cover the shooters, but that's important to beat a good team like the Bucks is to try to do both because their two-point percentage is really good, but they take a ton, right? So not like the best efficiency ever in the totality of their two-pointers, but we'll see. They don't get to the line a bunch for a team with Giannis. That surprises me, but they're really good on the glass. You can't. The Pacers have been getting killed on these second-chance point threes, and they're a good three-point shooting team, so the Pacers' perimeter defense, recovering to shooters, closeouts, all that has got to be crisp against this Bucks team. Crisp, because they have been fantastic at that. On the flip side, they lead the league in allowing two-point percentage. They allow the lowest two-point percentage in the league. Brooke Lopez and Giannis, fantastic protecting the paint. This is going to be a very tough night for Sabonis. I think an underratedly discussed tough night incoming for Sabonis. He has a very tough task to score on Lopez and Giannis and create for others in this game. So I think this is going to come down to something me and Adam talked about early this week.
it's pretty simple, right? The Bucks for giving up so little at the rim, they've done a good job there. They give up a lot from deep. 39.2% their opponents are shooting from deep. If the Pacers want to win, they're going to have to attack the basket, and then when Lopez and Giannis and whoever the guy that just drove to the basket beat, kick it out, the shooters have to hit those. The Pacers have to have another night like tonight shooting the three if they want to beat this Bucks team, because their defense is crisp and clean. I mean, it's only 15th in the league, but the personnel they have is definitely better than that. Their offense is first, so you're not going to get a lot in terms of, like, turnovers. And, you know, there is some correlation there. Like, you get back in a set defense when you make a shot, and it's easier to defend from a set defense than in transition. So having an amazing offensive rating automatically kind of helps you on defense, right? So it's going to be tough. It's just a tough team. For the Pacers to win, I think they're either going to have to do one of two. They're going to have to do a really good job closing out on the Bucks shooters and making them miss, or they're going to have to shoot ridiculous from three. I hate to be so reductive to say it's going to come down to stopping or hitting the threes, but when you're playing a guy like Giannis who dictates so much of the game, the only thing that has enough volatility and variance to help you potentially get over that hump when he's so good is three-pointers. So I think the Pacers can win. You know, I'd put it at like 25%, maybe 20%, but I'm probably going to pick the Bucks. They're not on a back-to-back. Again, they have Giannis. The Pacers don't. They've been in good form of late since the start of January. I can just pull it up. Wow, I'm so bad on basketball reference while I'm talking. Like, I think I can't pull up the stat I want to say, but I actually can. they are 15-9 in the year 2021, which is great. So they're just a good team. They're going to be tough. Again, the Pacers can win this game. The Bucks aren't like the daunting, mighty Bucks that they were last year so far because they switched up their roster so much. They'll get there, I believe, but they're not there right now. So they're beatable, but it's going to be tough. We'll see what happens. I pick a Bucks win, but I am notoriously dumb. So we'll see what happens. Thank you guys so much for listening. Adam will recap this one tomorrow. It should be fun. He'll have all the takes. And then Friday, we'll talk Jazz, we'll talk Pelicans, and I want to talk Jeremy Lamb season a little more later this week. So stay tuned for that. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you then.